The next case this morning is number 041462, Gomez against Bridgestone Firestone Incorporated. Mr. Medina.
Good morning, if it pleases the court. Let me begin by saying that the district court abused its discretion clearly by failing to comply with this court's direction in the Leroy Boyle's decision of September 2000 by failing to give any warnings regarding its intention to dismiss, other than signaling the defendant in its decision to enlarge the time to serve that they should file a Rule 41B motion to dismiss. But I'd like this court to focus on the on what is really.
How many deadlines did you miss?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
How many of the deadlines did you miss that the court gave?
Judge, when I looked at the docket sheet, and I think the docket sheet's in the record, when I looked at the docket sheet, what you're looking at is the scheduling order that applies to this case, which is an action in Argentina, which is dated 4-8-03. During the next 6 months is when all the activity in this case takes place. The first thing that takes place is a decision that $1,000 fee has not been posted. The second thing, and that is complied with in June, then there's a motion to dismiss. And any reasonable counsel is now going to focus on that motion to dismiss, and that motion is we haven't served Ford or Bridgestone. What happens in this case is not just an isolated case in a vacuum. You have a substantial number of cases. This accident happens in Argentina. They hire Puerto Rican counsel, the law firm of Luciano. An action is commenced in January of 2002. Then there's a decision, a stay, because the decision is to refer it to the MDL panel in Indiana. That takes almost 7 months. At the end of that, you start the process, and that's when you get that new scheduling order of 4803. And I would ask that this court focus on the fact that that 15-month period was a vacuum. That nothing was going on. Let me withdraw that.
After the case was transferred, how long did you wait to act?
When the case was transferred, and it was the file was transferred on May 17th, 02. The first motion on the docket that of significance was the failure to provide the trust fund litigation money, which was a determination for all the cases. And that $1,000, that was done in June of 03. Then the next 6 months, you have a motion by a Texas firm which has the driver, and I think it's significant that the court recognizes that the driver of the vehicle in the accident in Argentina is being handled by a Texas firm. The Argentinian firm notifies counsel in Puerto Rico that we're to follow the Texas firm, that they're going to be the lead counsel. They make a motion to consolidate and to intervene. That motion is then followed by a motion in August by defense attorneys that they haven't been served. There's no abandoning of the case here. Immediately, there's a decision by the district court in October. There's a decision by the district court that, yes, we're going to enlarge your time to serve, and it's complied with. Now, we can't be heard to hear the defendants to say that nothing's happened all along. They have been in every single case. It was reasonable for Puerto Rican counsel to assume, because they were transfer sheet, as Ford and Bridgestone were on the transfer sheet, that service had been completed. Now, regrettably, it hadn't, but the fact that the district court enlarged the time in October of 03 and service was complied with, now we have an action and we're proceeding. And the activity is such during the period, the six-month period, that I can't find a logical reason why the district court would have signaled the defendants to dismiss. She signaled the defendants to dismiss. She said, look, I'm going to grant the 21-day extension to serve, but why don't you make a 41B motion to dismiss? And based on that, Ford and Bridgestone First, they get served, and then they make their application to a larger time to answer, and then they make their motion to dismiss in December. I don't think this six-month window is sufficient to leave an architect and a musician with spinal injuries and head injuries who were thrown from the vehicle without a remedy. It's so drastic. It leaves these two individuals who are now without a remedy because, quote, I believe that the district court felt that someone had failed to comply. But the record is vacant of any proof that there was any... it just refers to it as failure to comply. I'm going to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Mr. Medina. We'll hear now from Mr. Knight.
Good morning, Your Honors. Charles Knight on behalf of the defendant appellees, Ford Motor Company and Bridgestone Firestone. There are two orders of the district court that are being attacked here. The first is the January 22 order, which dismissed this case for want of prosecution. Excuse me a moment. And in that order, the district court made two findings. She determined that the plaintiffs had done nothing to prosecute this case, and that virtually every deadline established in the applicable case management orders has expired. Subsequently, the plaintiffs filed a something styled as a motion in opposition to our motion to dismiss, and she essentially determined that nothing had changed and that the counsel's failings were so extreme that any judicial response short of dismissal would undermine the court's responsibility for the orderly management of this MDL and of the individual cases transferred to it. This case is one of hundreds of civil actions from around the country that have been transferred to Judge Barker in the Southern District of Indiana for coordinated pretrial proceedings. This individual case was filed in January 2002. Under Rule 3 of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, this action had commenced. The conditional transfer order from the Judicial Panel on Multidistrict Litigation was filed with the District Court in the Southern District in March of 2002. It was not until October 2003, after prompting by the District Court, that service was effected upon these defendants. The service was effected basically at the prompting of the District Court, which issued an order at the end of August in 2003 to the plaintiff stating, show good cause why you have not effected service on the defendants. Now, two documents were filed in response to that, one requesting leave to effect service. The district court, in an order in October, I believe it's dated October 9, granted the plaintiff leave to effect service, but her order is very telling, and it's in the record, it's in the appendix to the plaintiff's brief. It says, the docket suggests that the plaintiffs have done little, if anything, to prosecute this case since they filed it nearly 2 years ago. Numerous deadlines have been scheduled in this case and have apparently expired. Then further, if service is affected, the defendants may, notwithstanding the expiration of any deadlines established by the court's case management orders, file any motion under Federal Rule of Civil Procedure 41 or 56 that they deem appropriate. And then in a footnote, just to make it crystal clear, she said, the granting of this enlargement for service should in no way be read to immunize the plaintiffs from any other consequences of their apparent failures to prosecute this case.
Was this failure to serve something that somebody thought somebody else was doing? Why that big delay? Or did they think service had been completed and something happened and it wasn't?
There were two explanations. Well, the first explanation that was given in a two written responses to the motion to show good cause, the plaintiff's counsel, by way of a written submission, not in the form of an affidavit, claimed confusion about whether the defendants had been properly served or not. They just kind of assumed that service had been affected, they claimed. And then when the they filed the motion in opposition to the motion to dismiss, they contended that they were relieved of the responsibilities for complying with the case management order by virtue of the fact that service had never been affected. So the record's not crystal clear on this point, except that the fact that service, in fact, was not affected until the end of October of 2003, which was approximately 18 months after the case had been commenced and more than 2 years after the accident that is at issue in the complaint as filed, which was alleged the accident occurred in July of 2001.
And discovery had... The time for discovery had essentially expired at that point?
Discovery closed at the end of July. The district court's orders dismissing this case recite the applicable dates. I believe they are the middle of June in 2003, case-specific non-expert discovery closed, and at the end of July of 2003, expert discovery is supposed to be closed. So basically, there was nothing that could be done by way of discovery. Now, after the October 9 order issued by Judge Barker, the plaintiffs did effect service upon the defendants, and the defendants appeared and moved to dismiss and served the plaintiffs with their motion. The only response came in an untimely fashion. After the time for after the order of dismissal had already been ruled, and then came in the form of this kind of odd motion in opposition to the motion to dismiss. But the plaintiffs and their counsel were on notice that dismissal was a very real possibility, and that's all that's required, by three things. They had a motion to show good cause why the case shouldn't be dismissed for want of service. Now, as an attorney, if I got a motion like that from the court, I'd be I'd be up moving around. A lot of activity would occur. And second, they had the October 9, 2003 order essentially inviting either a motion for summary judgment or a motion to dismiss for want of prosecution. Now, that is crystal clear to any practicing attorney, saying when the court is inviting your opponents to file a motion to dismiss under Rule 41, what do you think is going to happen?
So what should they have done? Immediately moved for extended discovery?
Well, number one, they should have served something. They should have sought relief from the case management orders, which they never did, that established some sort of discovery cutoff. At a minimum, that's what they should have done. And third, I think they should have documented in a form that created issues of fact or irrebuttable issues in the form of an affidavit. What went so wrong in this case? They didn't do any of those things except affect service, and at the last minute at that. So they clearly had notice, and they had an opportunity to respond to the motion to dismiss. Even when the time for that occurred, and the local rule gives them 15 days to file a written response to a motion such as this, they didn't do it. So the case was basically queued up for ruling. The motion to dismiss was queued up for ruling. They hadn't filed anything. And Judge Barker, what else could she do? She dismissed it for want of prosecution because maybe not nothing, but essentially nothing had occurred to move this case forward in an accident that had occurred more than 2 years ago. So they, in their briefs in this court, they say there's no clear record of delay. Well, obviously, there's a clear record of delay. The only way they can make the assertions that they make in their brief is, one, ignoring the standard of review, which is that you must find that Judge Barker abused her discretion. That's a highly deferential standard of review. And, two, they want to confine your review of the conduct of this case to that period between the time when service was affected on the defendants in October 2003 till the dismissal order was entered. If you're going to review a case under Rule 41 that's been dismissed, you have to look to the entire record, the entire case, and you have to look, as Rule 3 of the Federal Rules suggests, to when it commenced, which was in January 2002. This case had been pending 2 years, more than 2 years, when the dismissal order was entered. And the only thing that occurred was the belated service of the defendants at the last minute, only because Judge Barker prompted that. If a district judge, given responsibilities to manage complex multi-district litigation involving hundreds of cases, is going to be able to manage those hundreds of cases or any individual case, she has to have the power to control her docket and to enforce her orders. And that's all that Judge Barker did in this case, and that's all that could be reasonably expected of her. The defendants submit that the order and judgment should be affirmed, and unless the court has any further questions.
Just one second.
Thank you, Mr. Knight.
Just a second, Ken.
Thank you, Mr. Knight.
Thank you.
How much time does counsel have? 4 minutes?
Your Honor, let me begin by saying that it's interesting that Ford and Bridgestone never indicate to this court that they did nothing during that same 18-month period. Nothing. They made no motion to dismiss, no motion for failure to serve. They remained silent. They watched the calendar. They were aware. They were getting all the notices. What you had here was an Argentinian law firm hiring a Puerto Rican law firm, because that's where the plaintiffs reside, to start the action, a decision by the district court to move it to Indiana. That Indiana decision takes about 7 months, 8 months before it starts, and then you have a scheduling order in April. And that scheduling order is the only order that's missed that I can see by the docket, Your Honor. And a severe remedy of eliminating the plaintiff's opportunity to be heard on the merits is, I just, sanction counsel. I mean, it's in the brief. Sanction counsel. If this court believes that the period is larger than that 6 months, sanction counsel. But counsel relied on the Texas lead attorney. They pulled out in December, Judge, after that motion in October of 2003. They were told they weren't going to be allowed to intervene and they weren't going to consolidate. They pulled out, and a Puerto Rican counsel was held with the case at that point, and they reacted immediately. They did the service, and they proceeded. The question is, where's the damage to the plaintiffs? What is it? Other than I'm going to agree with the court's position that it needed to comply with the scheduling order, but that's the only order, Judge, and there hasn't been a showing of any prejudice to the defendants. None.
What about discovery? I mean, there's nothing done with regard to these two plaintiffs, and wouldn't there have to be lots of discovery and investigation, et cetera, on the whole accident?
Judge, what was going on, medical experts were being hired. There was Argentinian experts hired. The expense associated with this case was going to be taken on by the Texas firm of Mitnoff and Jacks. And Argentinian counsel made the decision. We were going to wait till the decision of the consolidation and intervention, which that application was made on July 18th, 03. Everything that happens in this case, and I ask Your Honor to look at the docket, everything that happens in this case is in that six-month window. And once the district court says you will serve, you've got an enlargement of time, why are we hearing Ford and Bridgestone saying that, you know, well, that there's neglect, that there's an enlargement. It's already off the table. We're now serving, and we're proceeding. And I question whether the district court respectfully should have signaled defense counsel, to move for dismiss. And then without giving us specific reasons, this court, specific reasons in the record, what was it that we failed to comply with, she dismisses. It's just strikes me as patently unfair to these two plaintiffs, not having their day in court on a products liability case that clearly is not an individual case where counsel has failed to perform. This is a much larger case with a great deal of facts taking place, a great deal of discovery. Ford's involved all the way. Experts have already testified at that point that Ford knew that they had a defective product and hadn't handled it. And It would be, and I ask this court, I see no explanation why the district court judge just ignored this court's decision in Leroy Bolt to please, you must notify counsel of this type of drastic remedy, or at least tell them there will be no further extensions on their. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Medina, are you associated in the practice of law with Mr. Delgado?
What happened is, Your Honor, post this case, I became Mr. Luciano's partner, and I have four offices in New York and two in Connecticut.
Same firm?
Now it's Luciano and Medina in Puerto Rico.
I see. I would appreciate if you'd file a Circuit Rule 26.1 disclosure statement. We apparently don't have one for you in the record.
We filed it this morning, Your Honor.
Good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our thanks to both counsel for their presentations today, and the case will be taken under advisement.